Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the editor of the New Books Network. NBN listeners like to read books and buy them. So we thought we'd tell you that right now, our friends at Princeton University Press are having a remarkable site-wide sale. You can get 50% off books, including ebooks and audiobooks, with the code 50, F-I-F-T-Y, at checkout until May 31. You can save some real money on Princeton University Press books. I encourage you to go there and check it out.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to New Books in Jewish Studies. I'm Jason Shulman. We've got a great show for you today. My guest is Daniela Doron, who teaches at Monash University. Here to talk about her new book, Jewish Youth and Identity in Postwar France, Rebuilding Family and Nation, published in 2015 by Indiana University Press. Daniela, welcome to New Books in Jewish Studies.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you so much for the invitation.
It's great to have you. So, Daniela, you do this in the introduction, which is very helpful. Maybe you can do it briefly for us here. Set the stage for us. What are the key points to know about pre-World War II French Jewish history?
Sure. Well, I think that French Jewry was never a homogenous entity. It was all, since the 19th century, divided between kind of long-standing let's call them Republican Jews, French citizens of the Jewish faith, who were strong adherents of Republicanism. But what we also know from the literature is that they never fully adhered to the Republican ethos, in that they also saw themselves as Jews. And in addition, we had immigrants, Eastern European immigrants, move to France over the course of the 19th century and into the 20th century, who had their own ideas about Jewish ethnicity, Jewish politics, Jewish religiosity, which often came into conflict with the established Jewish community. And so it was very much a varied and variegated French Jewry. And that really continued to be the case into the wartime. And then during the war, as has been well established, around 72,000 Jews were deported and murdered. Around 2,000, roughly, between 2,000 to 3,000, came back from the concentration camps. In terms of children, who are often the main protagonists of my story, they too were victims of deportation. But also around 8,000 to 10,000 Jewish children were hidden with French foster families and institutions during the war. And this was done both by Jewish agencies, French resistance agencies, and also desperate Jewish families, desperate to ensure the safety of their children. And so my story picks up in the immediate aftermath of the war.
Right. So you say that the fall of France in 1940 served as the greatest challenge to French Jews' faith in French equality and liberalism. So tell us how the war was a turning point in the idea of France.
Sure. Well, the Vichy state brought into focus that republicanism could not ensure the safety of French Jews. Vichy was a betrayal of republicanism. And for those French Jews who had been, as one historian had said, zealots of the Republic, some began to question their unmitigated fidelity to republicanism. And we see that in some of the memoirs that were published in the aftermath of the war, that Vichy and World War II truly served as a shock, not just a danger, but a shock to French Jews. And I think they really began to come to grips with that in the war's wake.
You touched on this, but what happens to the children in France, and what kind of numbers are we talking about, by the way?
So during the war is your question.
Yes.
Well, you know, we don't have that, that's a very good question, because we don't exactly know the numbers. It's all what I would say is a guesstimate. But children either went into hiding with their families, right? Or they were deported with their families. First, they were placed in detention centers and then deported eastward, upon which the vast, vast, vast majority were murdered upon entering the death camps. Or they were placed in hiding. Some were placed with French families, French foster families who rescued them. Others were placed in French Catholic institutions, and this was done, as I said, either by Jewish resistance and rescue organizations or privately by French Jewish parents or Jewish parents. And there they had to adhere to a fictional name, a fictional biography, and keep their Jewish identity a secret. And this doesn't mean that they necessarily stayed with the same family or the same institution throughout the war. Sometimes they did, but sometimes they had to move based on changing local conditions. So if you put yourself in the perspective of a young child, this is not only an incredibly trying experience because these children were severed from their parents and their families, but they also had to keep up a story, which is, of course, rather difficult for children. And some of these families, and again, their experiences differed, right? Some of these families were truly loving and treasured these children. And in other cases, these familial situations and environments were more trying.
Right. So the war ends, and the book is about the post-war effort to rehabilitate Jewish children and reconstruct Jewish families. So before we get into the details, how does writing about the family and childhood in post-war French Jewish history sort of change the story that you started with?
Sure. I mean, so I was hoping by writing about children and families, I could both reframe how we understand French Jewish history and also reframe how we understand modern Jewish history. And what I try to do is show in terms of French Jewish history and French Jewish historiography that by focusing on children and families, it's not just a minor aspect of French Jewish reconstruction. In fact, if we look at efforts to rehabilitate children and families, then that gives us a lens through which to understand the evolving priorities of the French Jewish community in terms of reconstruction. And it sounds like a cliche, but, you know, children are the future, right? And so it does the efforts on behalf of children and families cut to the core of French Jewish rebuilding. And when I first started getting into the archives, not quite knowing exactly what the topic of my dissertation would be, because this book first started as a dissertation, what I was struck by was the overwhelming focus on children. That was not something I expected. I expected to write a book about familial reconstruction. And when I went into the archives, I saw that, in fact, that was not, the material wasn't there. The material was on children. So by writing about children and families, as I said, I tried to kind of write a story about French Jewish Reconstruction, but I also am interested in modern Jewish history and modern Jewish historiography more generally. And what I try to show in this book is that writing the history of families speaks to evolving ideas about citizenship and Jewish ethnicity, that families and nation are imbricated categories. And so to write a history of the family is not just about families, but it's also to write a history, a political history and a cultural history. And so those were, that was my interest in writing about children and families, both within French Jewish history and in modern Jewish history more generally.
Just to pick up on that, you know, when you say that ideas about the family are tied to national identity or ethnicity and citizenship, this is sort of at the level of ideas, right? I mean, how does that work exactly? And what's particularly French about this story?
Sure. I mean, so I think it's both a transnational story and also a national story. And so when I try to look at how both French bureaucrats and French families spoke, French non-Jewish families spoke about the idea of family versus how Jewish activists and Jewish families spoke about the institution of family, I saw that French non-Jews spoke about the institution of family through Republican ideals. So let me give you a very concrete example. One of my chapters is about custody disputes over orphaned youth. And French bureaucrats and these French Jewish foster families often insisted, well, any family is appropriate to raise a Jewish child. And French bureaucrats in particular placed faith in the French nation as a sufficient emotional anchor for children who had been denationalized by war, uprooted, displaced by war. Whereas Jewish activists often privileged Jewish ethnicity. So, for instance, they would say, well, in fact, while a family is ideally great and would be the ideal environment to raise a child, if that family is not Jewish, these children should be raised in a Jewish children's home. So these ideas about family were often framed through ideas about citizenship and ethnicity.
Right. Europe had just been decimated. How did the economic, you know, conditions impact the discussion?
Right. So, I mean, that's a very important backdrop. So Europe had been decimated, and of course, French Jews had not only been emotionally decimated, but economically decimated as well. They had lost their homes, they had lost their possessions. Many Jews in France in 1944 and 1945 were rebuilding with nothing. And for that reason, the vast majority of children who had been placed in children's homes had parents, either one parent or two parents. And, you know, for very understandable reasons, these parents didn't have the financial resources or the emotional wherewithal to care for their children at that time. Now, so that's the backdrop for actually the vast majority of these children being placed in children's homes. But what we see is that Jewish activists, who of course knew this, but at the same time were acutely concerned that the fact that these children were being placed in children's homes spoke to this crisis of the family in the post-war years. And we see a lot of anxiety that the Jewish family was falling apart and could not care for its children after the war. And hence the Jewish community had to take over, whether it's by building children's homes or by coming up with all sorts of initiatives such as sleepaway camps, such as a Jewish community center to make sure that Jewish children received a Jewish education and a Jewish identity. If the parents could not provide for that, which is what Jewish activists fear. So, you know, in that sense, again, this idea of ethnicity and the importance of rebuilding Jewish ethnicity framed this anxiety about families and ideas about the family in the aftermath of the war.
Before we get into the specific chapters, I just want to ask you briefly, it seems like some, you know, most of the main characters belong to a class of professionals, Jewish social workers, child welfare experts, communal leaders, psychologists. Why did they become so important during this time? And where were they during the war? I was curious about that.
Okay, so that's a very good question. So during the war, many of these people, you know, many of these people have heroic stories. I couldn't help but admire my protagonists. So many of these people were affiliated with rescue agencies or child welfare agencies during the war that engaged in the rescue and the hiding of Jewish children. So many of these protagonists were, you know, personally responsible for, you know, rescuing hundreds of children or overseeing their rescue. And then, and some of these people are French or they're Central / Eastern European Jews who had migrated to France in the 1920s and the 1930s and then continue to find themselves in France in the 1940s. And so in the aftermath of the war, they continue to be committed to the welfare of children, and they continue to be employed by these major Jewish child welfare agencies.
Chapter one is about how Jewish children functioned as a means of memory in the wake of the Holocaust. Tell us what's going on in that chapter, and then tell us specifically about the week of the martyred Jewish child.
Right. Okay, so in this first chapter, what I try to do in the book as a whole is narrate the evolving priorities of the French Jewish community. And what we see in that first chapter is that one, French Jews are acutely concerned about retrieving Jewish children for French Jewry. And, you know, I argue that that concern actually spoke to this issue of anxiety about the Jewish community being demographically depleted by the war. And they try to represent or discuss Jewish children's experiences during the war. And what I show is that by discussing Jewish children's quote-unquote martyrdom, and that was often the term used, including in this kind of one initiative that I discussed, the Week of the Martyred Jewish Child, French Jews attempted to disentangle the Jewish experience of genocide from the more universal French experience of suffering. And so by highlighting the murder of children, French Jews were trying to discuss genocide, the genocide of European Jewry. And the reason why the Week of the Martyred Jewish Child is such an important part of that story, let me explain what the Week of the Martyred Jewish Child was. So it was an initiative by Jewish child welfare agencies to publicly represent Jewish children's quote-unquote wartime suffering. And basically what ended up happening was that these Jewish agencies first started planning this week in which they would have all sorts of events in which they would discuss Jewish children's wartime experiences. And then this national week called the National Week of French children or suffering French children objected to the Jewish week, because you couldn't, to them, from their perspective, you could not separate Jewish children from French children. So basically what ended up happening is that this thereby sp- sparked a fight amongst Jewish agencies. Should they be part of the Jewish Week? Should they jump ship and join the French Week? Some did jump ship, some did not. The Jewish Week did, in fact, take place. But what I try to show is that in trying to discuss the genocide of the Jews, French Jews encountered a universalizing discourse. And for that reason, it was very difficult for specific memory of the Holocaust to take root and to be publicly accepted in the aftermath of the war.
Right. Yeah. In chapter two, you touched on this earlier, the court battles, custody, what should happen to these French Jewish children. Who's fighting whom in some of these stories? It seems like there are a lot of participants and the axes aren't always clear. So just give us a sense of that.
Sure, there are lots of participants. So we have, on the one hand, Jewish child welfare activists who are trying to ensure that these orphan children are placed in a Jewish setting. You have the French state, which is actually the official guardian of these children, and it is the French state who makes the decision as to where these children should be placed. You have French foster families who, in many cases, love the children who have been living with them for years, and in some cases are reticent to give up custody of the children. You have Jewish relatives of the children who, in some cases, want custody. In some cases, are not quite sure what to do with the children. Some of these cases became rather heated, and in some cases, the children preferred to stay with their French foster families. And in those cases, it wasn't so clear to the guardians how best to resolve this heated issue. And you have also Catholic observers who also try to have a say in terms of where these children should be placed. So you're right, there are lots of different actors, and that's because these cases became rather heated. And it wasn't clear to anyone what was the best solution for these children.
Right. I want to move to chapter five, which looks a little bit later into the early 1950s. So it seems that after, sort of 5 to 10 years of working through these issues, there seems to be some sort of emergence of unity. And there's the JCCs, the youth groups. Tell us sort of what is the turning point and what happens?
Sure. So in the chapter, we see the Jewish community shift from immediate relief and rehabilitation to longer term planning. And what we see in this chapter is that the idea of youth being unaffiliated with the French Jewish community, the idea of parents not being able to properly care for their, quote unquote, properly care for their children or give their children a Jewish identity scared Jewish communal leaders. And it's that anxiety, that fear, that pushed French Jewish leaders to begin to work together. And again, we have to remember that the French Jewish community, both before the war and after the war, was rife with political divisions. Zionist, communist, religious, Orthodox. So, there are lots of circulating, contested visions of kind of the future French Jewry. And so rather than continuing to fight it out, as they had in the interwar years, in the post-war years, we begin to see French Jewish agencies work together. And what I try to show in this chapter is how they began to work together on behalf of affiliating children. And so the beginning of the chapter really begins with continued sectarian divisions. But by the end of the chapter, let's say around 1955, when they start to build a Jewish community center, we really see successful efforts at Jewish communal solidarity on behalf of Jewish children.
Right. And then it sort of worked out well in that they took what they had learned and applied it a decade later when they had all these North African Jews who immigrated. Is that right?
So that's what I try to show in this story, that rather than looking at the immigration of North African Jews or at the efforts of American Jewish relief and rehabilitation agencies at creating solidarity amongst French Jewry. So rather than looking outside, right, immigration from North Africa or the efforts of the American Joint Distribution Committee, rather, we see that between 1945 and 1955, French Jews themselves were trying to inch towards solidarity and towards communal cohesion. And so all of the themes that we see really in the forefront of the French Jewish community in 1950s onwards, when North African Jews began moving to France, were really percolating in the immediate aftermath of the war. So yes, I do think it did serve them well in the long run.
You know, we've had on the show Maud Mandel, Kimberly Arkin, Sarah Abravaya Stein. Is there a renaissance in French Jewish studies going on right now?
I hope so. I think so. When I first started graduate school, there were very few people working on French Jewish history. There was Paula Hyman, most famously, and the work of Maud Mandel absolutely influenced me and influenced this book. But it was a small group. But now when I go to the Association for Jewish Studies, we're a rather large cohort. We're a growing cohort. And there are more and more graduate students drifting into French Jewish history. And that's become a really exciting development.
What do you hope your book sort of contributes to or starts a broader conversation about the history of the Jewish family?
I think that's a very good question. And I think what I hope to do and what I hope to do in this book is to show that the history of the Jewish family needs more scholarly attention. French Jewish historians have written about gender rather well. The French Jewish family has received attention by social historians, and they've made rather important scholarly contributions, but it hasn't received very much attention by political and by cultural historians. And that's in essence what I was trying to do with this book, that ideas about the family also speak to ideas about Jewish ethnicity and national identity. And so how Jewish families were formed and reformed, how they fell apart, how they were tried to be rebuilt, speaks to evolving ideas about Jewish identity. And so the family is not an organic unit. It's one that's constantly, consciously built and rebuilt, and one that's and ideas about the family are also nationally specific. In this case, I was telling a very French story that was inflected by ideas about republicanism. If I moved this story over to the United States, it would take a very different shape.
Well, Daniela, we've taken up a lot of your time, so any parting thoughts you'd like to share, and what are you working on next?
I'm still interested in the history of childhood, and I'm still interested in the history of the family. And so now I'm working on the migration of Jewish unaccompanied youth from Eastern Europe to the United States from the end of the 19th century into the post-World War II period. And I came to this idea actually by noticing, by being firmly convinced that ideas about the family are nationally specific. And when I was looking at my American Jewish sources, they wildly disagreed with French Jews about the institution of family. So I'd like to see how these ideas about the family emerged over time and emerged through the cooperation and also the friction between American Jewish agencies and European Jewish agencies over the care of Jewish youth.
Daniela, that sounds like a great project. I want to thank you for being on the show today. The book is
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Sure. The book is Jewish Youth and Identity in Postwar France, Rebuilding Family and Nation, published in 2015 by Indiana University Press. The author is Daniela Doron. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.